After the death in 2019 of her husband Sam, the love of her life, she was unexpectedly flooded with optimism and presented with a host of possibilities for an exciting and meaningful future. She received valuable insights seemingly coming from an outside source, enabling her to conceive a more realistic and uplifting understanding of death and loss. She knows this concept will free others to face the passing of a loved one with a far more optimistic outlook. Having lived most of her life in Los Angeles area, Ms. Goodman now resides in Prescott, Arizona. She is a retired mechanical engineer. She sings and plays the violin semi-professionally. For over 20 years, she served a Long Beach, that's California area newspaper, as a theater critique. She's currently writing her second book, Speed Bumps and Other Impediments to Life in the Fast Lane, a slightly self-depreciating treatise on the trials of life, especially from the point of view of a type A personality. Now, this is the gorgeous person we're talking to on the show today. Don't go anywhere. Grab your cup of tea, your cup of coffee, or your bottle of water as we get to meet with Vicky and just explore what grief is. I know a lot of us don't like talking about death and grief, but it's something that we all are going to pass through and we all are going to experience loss at some point. So I am actually looking forward to this conversation and to gain some insight on how she's been able to navigate this journey of losing a dear one, right? So I'll be right back with my guest.
No matter how dark the night is, the sun always rises. No matter how hard life gets, keep moving forward. You never know what amazing things are waiting just around the corner. No story is too rough and no journey is too tough. Join us on Stretch Street to be inspired by the stories of people who have been through it all and come out stronger. Stretch Street Podcast. Stretching without snapping.
Hello and welcome to yet another episode on the Stretch Street Podcast. This is the Energetic EJ. And of course, you know, I am super excited to be here again this week. How are you doing? I hope you've had a great week so far. If not, don't worry. There are still a couple of days in the week and you can still switch things up, okay? And if you've had a great week so far, yay, congratulations. I hope that the rest of the week is going to be amazing for you. Hello, hello, Vicky. Welcome, welcome, welcome to the show. How are you today?
Oh, I'm great, EJ. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for being here. So, Vicky, could you start by telling us a little bit about yourself and your background before you became an author?
Well, that's the thing. I was a mechanical engineer and actually a real property appraiser, too. I didn't mention that in the bio. And I enjoy writing. I love writing and I love singing. The violin I've been playing since age 7. Oh, wow. And it's not my passion, but I do play in a pops orchestra here in Arizona where I live. And, you know, I'm just enjoying retirement. I like hiking and walking and I love doing lunch. I call a friend about once a week and say, let's do lunch, please.
So when you say do lunch, is it like go out for lunch or you making the lunch?
No, go out for lunch. Okay. It's kind of, yeah, it's kind of a slang phrase for going out for lunch. Yeah. So yeah, I love doing that. And you know, I'm just a normal person who had an extraordinary experience after losing my husband, Sam, in 2019. And it was so extraordinary that I know this story can help others. So don't go away. I know death and grief are topics that we avoid like crazy. And I'm going to talk about that right up front, because I don't want anyone to go away. You don't want to miss these notions and concepts that I have to tell you about.
Absolutely fantastic. I love it. I love it. Do you mind if I ask, like, how old are you now?
I'm 69 years old.
You look gorgeous.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
Right. So let's come back to the topic of grief. You could have done anything else, but what inspired you to write a letter to Sam with love? What was the inspiration behind writing the book?
What happened after he passed was truly extraordinary. Now, first of all, let me tell you that I was born in a secular family where no one believed in God or an afterlife that I know of, none of my relatives. And my parents and grandparents even thought that people who believed in a higher power were weak and foolish. I mean, it was that bad. So I had begun to believe in a higher power some years before Sam got sick. We had both talked about it and decided we were raised very similarly, just on opposite coasts of the United States. And we both decided it made no sense for there to be nothing that created all this that we see. But I hadn't taken that belief very far. It remained very rudimentary until the point at which Sam passed. And then all of a sudden, I wanted to know if he was still there, where he was. So I had access to the hospice chaplain about once a month for a year after Sam passed. And I started asking her questions about the afterlife. She recommended that I read the story of a neurosurgeon, a secular neurosurgeon, who had had a near-death experience. And I read his miraculous story because he never should have survived the brain infection, the massive brain infection that he somehow got. And his colleagues were taking care of him in the hospital and they couldn't get the infection under control. He was in a coma for 7 days and had a near-death experience that convinced him that everything that people say about God and the afterlife is true. There's a loving God and a beautiful afterlife. He even describes having known everything there is to know in this universe while he was having his near-death experience. He remembers knowing everything. He doesn't remember all those things he knew. So anyway, it's a very interesting story. But the point is, it took me the rest of the way to believing in God and an afterlife, just reading the one story. Since then, my faith has only grown stronger. And I'm so grateful because I no longer fear death. And I no longer question where Sam's soul is. I know where it is, and I know he's still around, and I actually have a story of how that was confirmed to me, knowing that Sam is actually visiting me. At night, when I turn off the light, I see sort of an apparition almost every night, and I can tell that story if you'd like, but the point is, I know he's around, and after I published my book, which you asked about, and I will tell you about it, but after I published the book, some of the best insights that came to me happened then. And so those are in 3 audio episodes that completely upend the way our culture awfulizes death and loss. The news is really good. So I put all of that in the audio episodes that I'll tell you about at the end. So the book, let's get back to the book, To Sam with Love, A Surviving Spouse's Story of Inspired Grief. What I did was I thought that readers should get to know Sam and me a little bit before I get into, you know, what happened when he got sick. And then what happened for me afterwards. So the book is roughly in thirds. I tell some about Sam's life and a little of my own and our time together. And then the middle third is about our receiving this diagnosis, which was terminal from the beginning, not even the terminal that you think about, where some people, you know, maybe a small percentage might actually survive. All of the doctors, and we got several opinions, all of them said, he will not survive this. You will not get a miracle. This is not one that anybody has ever survived. So we had to prepare ourselves for Sam to pass. They said anywhere from a year to 2 years after that diagnosis. And then the latter third of the book is about the insights and serendipitous events and the opportunities that came my way. All of these things happened and they were all really inspired, which is why in the subtitle of the book, I say a surviving spouse's story of inspired grief. Mm. Inspired grief is kind of an oxymoron, right,
exactly,
EJ?
Yeah.
But I used it because it really does, for me, describe the incredible experience I had after losing the love of my life. And just to give you an idea of how incredible it was, on the very day Sam passed, I was unexpectedly flooded with optimism. It was unseemly it happened so soon. And my first instinct was to push it away. But I thought, you know, I was so strong during our 2-year ordeal. And I took such good care of Sam at the end when he needed taking care of, that maybe if good things want to come my way, I should let them. It was the best decision I could have made. Mm. And that's when everything started happening.
Mm. Wow. So how long did it take for you to complete the book when you started to write it? Because how long did it take to be able to chronicle some of your experiences after he passed? How long did you work on the book?
Yeah, great question. It took about 2 years of experiencing all of this before I said, you know, I was looking back on it all and I thought, this story can help other people. It can even help people who aren't facing the loss of a loved one now, because we all will. You said that earlier. We will all have this circumstance in our lives at some point. And so these concepts that I have to share are great even for people who aren't facing loss right now. Obviously, people who are will benefit the most immediately.
But the
concepts will help people who aren't facing that loss. It will prepare them to face it in the future. And the book took me about really just a few weeks to write. You know what I do? I force myself to do things. Well, I love writing, so I don't have to force it. But I thought, okay, if I can write a chapter a day, I can actually have this book written in a couple of weeks. Well, it took about 3 weeks.
Wow.
So, and then I had a few friends read it and everybody said, don't refer to the story, tell the story. And I said, yeah, but we're not famous people. Well, you've written it in such a way that we want to know the story. And that was good news. I thought, oh, it's interesting. Okay. So then I went back and it took me another couple of weeks to add another 40% to the length of the book to tell the stories. And then everybody reread it and said, yeah, now you should publish it.
I love it. I love the process it took to birth it, right? And that's to show, you know, how real it is, what, you know, what you shared in your book. Now, can you kind of describe the initial emotions and challenges you faced after the loss, after Sam passed? What were they? You mentioned just now, like, on the day he passed, you felt optimism, right? So did that switch at any point, or have you just maintained that afterwards?
I did maintain it. You know, I'm so glad you asked this question, because I thought that, okay, this is a defense mechanism. The bottom is going to drop out of all of this at some point, but it never did. And it's been almost 5 years. What did happen was I grieved. I did. In fact, I have a couple of tips for you about that. What I did, and this came to me instinctively, but I don't know if it'll come to everyone who loses the love of their life instinctively. So let me just tell you, what I did was I established a balance between activity and alone time. Okay. So the activities, and some of them were new things I hadn't done before. Like, I didn't know I could sing. Now I sing in public. Somebody asked me if I wanted to come to karaoke just to meet some really nice people. You don't have to sing. Anyway, it turned out I could sing. So that was a great story. But these were activities I pursued, and I traveled to places I probably couldn't have gone to if Sam were still alive, like Antarctica. He wasn't the type to want to do something quite that adventurous, you know? So I thought, you know, I'm going to do some things that I'd like to do that I probably wouldn't have done if Sam had lived. Why not? So I started singing. I started traveling to some unusual places. I rejoined the orchestra I had played in up to the point where we received Sam's diagnosis. I just started doing whatever I wanted to do. I even acted in a play. I'd been a theater reviewer for over 20 years in Long Beach, as you read in my bio, but I'd never acted in a play. And I always thought maybe someday, you know, I can audition for something and maybe get a little part. So I auditioned for a staged reading at our community playhouse. I was so intimidated by the auditions that went before me. They all sounded so polished and experienced, and they were. I wound up getting the female lead.
Wow.
I'm telling you, this entire experience was so inspired. So I kind of got off on a tangent here, but these are the kinds of things that happened for me. And so I was talking about the balance of activity and alone time. So these are the things that I was doing that I call activities. The alone time is just quiet time. You know, maybe you're taking a walk. Maybe you're just sitting at home. Maybe you're even reading a book, but you have to process the loss. You know, it occurred to me, EJ, fairly recently that our grief kind of takes two parts. Okay. One is the grief for the actual loss that you experience. The other is the grief for the way your life is changing. Because this person who you shared your home with isn't there. Suddenly you're alone there. Well, the part my message can definitely do something about is the loss of the person, because you haven't really lost them. Their soul endures and it goes on. And if you're open, you will perhaps receive messages or the apparition that I described earlier, and I can tell that story. The part I can't do anything about is the grief we experience over the way our life is going to change, because that's just something we all have to deal with. So that's why that balance between activity and alone time, the alone time processing the changes that are happening to our life, because we all fear the unknown and the uncertainty of what's going to happen next. That's why my message is so powerful here. So that's something that people really need to do. And people will tell them, keep yourself as busy as possible so you don't have time to think or feel right after someone passes. No, you must have some alone time in order to process this. And you will know what's right. You will know what that balance should be.
For you. So it's going to, yes. If you lean into it for yourself, it will come to you how to balance it. And so this alone time, this for you specifically, Vicky, the alone time, because I'm trying to wrap my head around it, that was it like you didn't have the times where you like truly broke down to cry and things like that? Or was it just that you were just able to hold yourself together, you know? And how were you sure it wasn't a coping mechanism at some point, you know, that, you know, again, it's almost like is this to say that, you know, there is no, this is how to grieve. So for you, it might just be sleeping and crying all day. But for me, it's like, I just need to be alone to think about the moment that I spent with this person who's no longer here. And then also get to explore myself as well. Like, this is my new reality. So what is the balance? How are you able to get the that balance to say, did you ever break down, or was this just something that you just were able to create that balance between both sides?
The activity portion was really crucial, because while I was missing Sam so much at the beginning, I was able to do those new things that were fun and interesting.
Okay.
So many people feel guilty moving on too soon.
Right.
And I'm here to tell you that part of my message, and it's in the audio episodes, is that souls in the afterlife want only good things for us. They don't experience negative emotions. That's all stuff that happens because of our brains, and our brains die with our bodies. All that's left is the soul, and the soul is in this beautiful place with God where there are no negative emotions. I'm convinced of that, especially after reading this neurosurgeon's account of what happens in the afterlife. So if there are no negative emotions, like, for example, jealousy or anger, then we don't have to worry about moving on too soon, because we are grieving, but we can do productive and fun and interesting, worthwhile things while we're doing so.
Right.
And then when we're ready, we can move all the way into that new life. It doesn't happen immediately. You know, you're going to dabble, you're going to try things. But what makes me so sad is when I hear about someone that, I think they call it complex grief, where someone just rolls up into a ball and doesn't do anything for months, and I've heard of even years. This kind of not funny, but it is kind of. I was offered a support group and those meetings with the hospice chaplain, and I said yes to both. Well, the support group had a leader, wonderful lady, whose husband had passed maybe 10 years before, but she reported having rolled up into a ball and done virtually nothing with her life for a full 6 years. And she was leading the support group.
Wow.
I kind of feel like somebody more, well, actually, it doesn't matter, because she did a good job with it. But I was astounded that she had experienced the passing of her husband in that extreme way, and basically spent 6 years of her life just feeling awful. And it's just not necessary.
Right. And I like what you said with the concept of the people that we miss, the loved one that we miss, their body is what is no more. Their soul lives on. True. And in the place where their souls are, they can't really, there are no negative, you know, emotions there. And so ideally they would want for us to actually move on and, you know, just still think about them, still continue to love them, but actually not put our lives on hold just because we are grieving for them. And that really, resonates.
That's exactly right. And people need to know that. But they're saying, how can you control your emotions? You know, how can you not feel absolutely awful? This was the love of your life.
And that's what I was trying to ask you. Like, so you are you saying that? Because I'm like, how did you do it?
Okay, well, I did grieve. I mean, I thought about Sam all the time. I would talk to him all the time. And I did cry sometimes, but not a lot. You know what I did? There were some coping mechanisms, like, for example, the balance that I described. But I also found a greeting card he'd given me. It was the most recent one he gave me before he passed. It was a Valentine's card that he gave me in February of the year he passed in July. So it was only a few months old at the time he passed. And I would read that card every single night before I went to bed. And sometimes it made me cry, but not usually. It just made me feel good to read it, because one of the things that as humans happens, at least it happened for me, so I assume it happens for others, is that we start to kind of wonder if we imagined this person. Was I really married to Sam for 22 years? I mean, you know, I had all his clothes still in the closet and all the things we acquired together in this house that we built together in our retirement locale. But it didn't seem real, you know, and I wanted it to be real. So I found that card, and Sam chose the greeting cards he gave me very carefully. They had to express just the right sentiment. And so it brought back what we'd had together to read this card every night. And it really comforted me. And I read it every single night before bed for an entire year. And then I'd kiss the bottom of the card. I don't know why. It just seemed like a good thing to do. And it really helped me. And I'd go to bed. Absolutely. And then, I'd go to bed. I'd turn out the light. And then I'd see the apparition a few minutes later before falling asleep. So if you'd like, I will tell that story, because it's kind of a wow story.
Okay, tell it.
EJ, yeah.
Because it's your experience, so yeah, share it.
Yeah, so very soon after Sam passed, I don't remember how long, maybe the first night, but I don't think so. I think it was within the first couple of weeks. I would go to bed and turn out the light. You know, it takes a few minutes for me anyway to fall asleep. And after 3 to 5 minutes, I started seeing this kind of smoky grayish white thing. And it was very vivid, I think, the first time I saw it, meaning maybe it had been there before. But once it appeared vivid, I noticed it, because most nights it wasn't. Most nights it was very subtle. And I think I'm just imagining this because I want to believe Sam is there. And maybe this is a manifestation of his soul. Anyway, I would see it, not every night, but most. And after a few months, it kind of changed color to a neon yellow green. And again, sometimes it was so subtle, I'd wonder if it was really there, but sometimes it was so vivid, it was hard to ignore. After a year of this, I said to God, and I would talk to the apparition, you know, I would say, "Hi, sweetie, I hope that's you," you know, and I'd tell him about things or ask him questions, but I never got any answers. But, you know, I just talked to him. So after a year of this, I was talking to let's not be scattered about this, Vicky. After a year of this, I wanted to know if the apparition was really Sam. So I spoke to God early in the day, not at bedtime, early in the day. And I said, "God, I am really growing weary of wondering if the neon yellow green thing is Sam. So this is what I want you to do for me. I have a plan." And I had begun praying. I prayed every night. And I didn't believe in praying for myself. So I told God I was making an exception to that rule. And I was going to ask him for something for me today. And I hoped he didn't mind. And I said, "This is what you can do. After I go to bed tonight, if the neon yellow green thing is Sam, please make it as vivid as ever. Make it maybe move differently than it usually does. You know, usually it just kind of floated around gently or kind of goes in and out." I said, "You know, just do something to tell me that this really is Sam. If it's not Sam's soul, then just give me jet black, because usually I don't see that either. I just see something kind of in between. And if I saw the apparition the way I normally do, it would just mean God had chosen not to answer my prayer, and I'd be no worse off, right?" So that night, it's getting to be bedtime, and I'm thinking, what have I done? What if I get jet black? Am I ready to find out this hasn't been Sam's soul all this time? I thought, well, I can't stay up forever, so we'll see what happens. So I go to bed, I turn out the light, and instead of waiting the usual 3 to 5 minutes to appear, the apparition was there immediately, as soon as I turned out the lights. And it was as vivid as it had ever been. And instead of moving around gently or in and out, it frantically crossed my view about 4 or 5 times within a second or two, and then gone. And I burst into tears and I thanked God and I said, I'll never question the identity of the apparition again. And what I think might have happened, and this came from the story of the neurosurgeon, is he says souls have energy. And so I thought, poor Sam, he must have expended all of his energy in that 1 to 2 seconds to render this display to convince me that was him. So anyway, that's the story of the apparition. And I still get the visits almost every night. And most of the time they're very subtle. But like last night, for example, he was pretty vivid. It really appeared pretty decisively last night. So I know. I wouldn't believe it if I was hearing this story, but right. I'm just telling what happened.
Right. Wow. That's interesting. Yeah. But thanks for sharing that again, because yeah. At the end of the day, you know, it's almost like there are those things that happen to us and it feels like, are you serious? Like, is it true? But again, it's our experience to share. And the people who might have the opportunity to experience similar, they would be able to resonate and relate, like, oh, okay, maybe this could be similar to what I'm experiencing. And I think that's the whole point of us sharing our experiences, because there will be somebody out there who can listen and hear it and can just resonate with it and know, okay, I'm not crazy. Something like this could have happened before.
You know, there are other things too. Like for example, and this is a very short story. I gave Sam 2 celebrations of life, one, a smaller one up here in Prescott and a larger one in Los Angeles, where we had people who had known us forever. And, you know, so the one in Prescott, I actually couldn't even have it at the house. We, even though we hadn't been here very long, I had a list of 60 people to invite and 49 of them were able to attend. So I had to have it at this venue. So, and Sam's favorite flower had been sunflowers. And I know a lot of men don't have a favorite flower, but Sam did. He loved sunflowers. So I had told the people at the venue that I was going to bring sunflowers to put on the tables. They offered to do it for me, which I thought was very nice. So there were going to be sunflowers on the table. So I am driving to the celebration of life about 45 minutes before it was going to start. I'm only a half mile away from the place. And suddenly there's this almost cartoonish little funny looking bright blue car in front of me. And up from the roof of that car is this plastic flower, and it's bent back toward me so that I could clearly see that it wasn't just any flower. It was a plastic sunflower. And I thought, maybe one of my guests, you know, who's coming to the event, you know, maybe knew that Sam loved sunflowers. And I thought, no, that's completely implausible. And then the little car turned off onto a side road, no longer heading where I was heading. And I thought, what were the chances of that? So the point of telling that story is that, you know, a lot of people who have lost someone say, I never get any messages. I wish I got messages or symbols or something. You have to kind of open up to, you have to open yourself to the possibility and start being observant. I am not a very observant person, and Sam knew it. So, I'm sure these 2 things that I've described so far, are on the obvious side. And, right. You know, he probably knew that it was of no use to do something subtle. So, I wasn't going to notice.
Wow. Yeah. All right. Thank you so much for sharing that story. Let me ask you, what were some of the most difficult moments you encountered while grieving, and how were you able to navigate them?
Well, my balance that I described before was put to the test because Sam passed in July of 2019. What happened in February of 2020?
COVID.
Suddenly, the balance was completely upset.
Right.
And I was spending way more time alone than was really good for me. Certainly more than was dictated by that balance between activity and alone time I had achieved.
Right.
Well, over the next few months, I had 3 depressions, and they each lasted precisely 10 days. I would just sit in my living room staring out the window pretty much for 10 days straight, unable to do much else. And I thought that balance was really working for me. Look at what I'm going through now. And I don't know how much of it was attributable to all the uncertainty and angst we all experienced with COVID and those restrictions.
Right.
Or how much of it had to do with Sam. But my suspicion is that both combined was just too much for me. Yeah, you know, because it was only, you know, 7 or 8 months after Sam passed.
Yeah.
And one thing I want to tell you is that even though I was having all this fun trying all these new things after Sam passed, I would come home and feel empty inside. Nothing had any meaning. And I thought, okay, I don't have Sam to share these things with, you know? But even though things aren't perfect, I know that I'm on the right path. This is the way to move forward. Maybe it was God, you know, it felt like there was a helping hand coming down from outside of myself, guiding me forward with all the optimism and the opportunities and the serendipitous events and the insights. I never felt that these things were coming from inside me. So God was leading me, what else can I say? It was hard for me to negotiate the uncertainty of COVID, and it was hard for me not to have anyone to share all the activities and the new experiences with, but I knew I was on the right path and that I shouldn't change a thing.
Right.
And that's the way it is. You have to expect that things aren't going to be fantastic, but they can be really good.
I like that. I like that. And you can work with good.
Yeah.
On the way to fantastic, by the way.
On the way to fantastic, which happened. And it didn't take that long.
Right.
You know,
so basically
maybe
you kind of went through it and just kept on embracing the good that is in it until you were able to unravel it, right?
And accepting what wasn't so good, meaning that nothing had any meaning for a while. But so it lasted, I'd say, about a year and a half, you know, or so. Maybe not even. But the point is, however long that lasted, I knew I was on the right path.
Right.
And so, you know, life is hard. Sometimes things aren't perfect. Sometimes they can't be perfect. But I am confident that with God's help, I moved forward into that exciting new chapter of life the best way I could.
Right.
And it wasn't half bad.
And so the encouragement here is to also have people do the best they can as they grow into that, you know, open space where they don't allow the grief to just weigh them down and completely shut them down.
Right. In other words, don't let grief or feeling like there's a right way to do this keep you from doing things that are worthwhile while you're grieving.
Right.
Establish that balance. Right. It will help you in the end.
Right, right.
Love yeah.
It. Love it. If you were to highlight one or two life lessons that you've carried on from that experience of grief into, you know, you now living, what would those lessons be?
Well, I think the way we conceptualize death in our culture is really harmful. What occurred to me after I published the book, it's in the audio episodes, but I'll tell you some of it. And that is, I ask the question, is death really tragic? I say no. Let me explain. If there is a loving God, and if there is a beautiful beyond words afterlife, and if God has a plan for each one of us, then isn't it just a part of life for, let's say, in a married couple, unless both die in an accident of some kind, one is going to predecease the other. It's meant to be that way. So what it really means is that God had that plan, in my case, for Sam to predecease me, because I have more to do on this earth during the time I have left. That's God's plan for me. We all have lessons to learn, maybe even things to teach.
Right.
You know, I'm not the kind of person that puts out a message like this. This is completely divinely inspired. It's just not my nature. But here I am, you know, having done probably 35 podcast episodes in the last 6 months, writing a book, recording audio episodes, talking
working
about
on the second book,
working on the second. Well, it is me to be a writer. The other book I actually started before I wrote to Sam with love, but I put it on hold in order to do this because I thought it was important. So God has this plan, and I now recognize that. And so everything I do, I'm thinking, okay, what does this mean? What is likely God's plan with this? Especially adversity. We all have bad things happen to us. Anything from a bad hair day, which I used to have a lot of, to, you know, our house burning down or our spouse passing, or all kinds of terrible, you know, things that we think of as terrible happening. Now, instead of throwing a tantrum, I say, okay, what is God trying to teach me here? Doesn't mean I'm going to love the fact that it happened, but I am going to look for the lesson because I also think that God stops trying to teach you that particular lesson once you get it. Yes. So if you have the same thing happening over and over again, and you deal with it very badly, God's going to keep throwing that at you. So if you want it to stop happening, learn the lesson.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I love it. I love it. Like that's the core of what I do here on Stretch Street, to say that, see, challenges are not exclusive to any of us. We all go through them. But when we assume the posture to say, what is this challenge here to teach me? Then we're able to distill the life lessons from it. And that's how we grow. And that's how we add value to life. You know, just like you with your experience, what you've learned from your own experience has now taught you that actually, is death truly a terrible thing? Maybe not. It's just a transition. It was through this experience that you got to know or got to come into the acceptance that there is a God somewhere and he's got plans for all of us. And now look at you. You're looking at this seemingly negative situation and actually looking at the blessings that came with that experience. And I think that's the beauty of life. And you know, that's one way that we can really make our time here on this part of eternity count when we look at the seemingly negative things and see what's the good in them. For us, you know.
Right. And so embracing these concepts really do change the nature of grief. You're still right. going to grieve, but it's going to be a more optimistic and positive experience.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It reminds me of, you know, what the scripture says. I'm a Christian, and the Bible says in a place like, for us Christians, we do not grieve as of those who are hopeless. Why? Because we know it's not an eternal departure. So there's that hope that we're going to see again. We're going to meet again at some point. So it's not hopeless. It's not like, oh, this person is gone. Yes, we'll feel the pain of the person not being here, the pain of us not being able to do life again with that person. But then we still rejoice over the person, knowing that they're in a better place. They are now out of this world of troubles, of pains, of trials. They are now in a better place. And then we can look forward to one day, I'm going to be with you. Yeah.
Exactly. We join them later. And what you said is so true. They are in a gorgeous place. It's almost as if instead of awfulizing death, we should celebrate it. Look at where they get to go.
Exactly. Right, right. Yeah. I love it. I love it. Awesome, awesome, awesome. So do you want to speak a little bit as we round up the session about the current book you're working on?
Sure. Yeah. Speed Bumps is kind of self-deprecating. I like making fun of myself. I was a type A personality all of my life. It's hard to tell if I still am. I guess I probably am. But when you're working.
Before you go on, what's a type A person for those who don't know?
Oh, type A person is those impatient types that we all have in our lives, you know, or maybe you are one of them, you know, like me, you know, impatient, kind of driven in some ways, to the point of maybe a little unhealthy, you know, have a hard time just relaxing. But impatience, I think, for me, is the main characteristic. Mm-hmm. And so just to give you an idea, so speed bumps and other impediments to life in the fast lane. So it's this sort of somewhat self-deprecating in places, treatment of life, of the trials of life, especially from the point of view of one of these impatient types. Because if you think about it, impatience causes trials. If you were a more relaxed person and a more patient person, a lot of the things that constitute trials and tribulations for a type A wouldn't even be a trial or tribulation for you if you were not a type A. So, okay, just to give you an example, one of my favorite chapters that I've written so far is called Road Rage 101. Well, I mean, I'm not using the term road rage from the standpoint of the extreme type where, you know, someone actually threatens another driver or shoots another driver, nothing like that. I'm just talking about, you know, you're driving behind someone in the fast lane who's going 10 miles per hour under the speed limit and you can't even get over because it's either one lane or there's somebody right next to them. And I call that, you know, the traffic vigilantes who think that it's their job to keep everybody driving at a really calm speed. They don't realize that if someone like me gets behind them, they're actually creating a dangerous situation because I am going to do everything I can to get around them, you know, and they're making me mad. And anyway, I have actually conquered this. But it's such a cool chapter that I'm keeping it, even though it doesn't really describe my experience anymore. I have actually succeeded in conquering my impatience behind the wheel.
That's a good one. That's a good one. Yeah. That's going to be a fun one to read. And
yeah, it's pretty funny. Yeah.
All right. So is there anything else that you'd like to share with our listeners about your journey, your book and upcoming projects? Yeah.
Yes. So I have these three audio episodes I'd mentioned, and I want you to go to inspiredgrief.com now and subscribe, because if you save it for later, you won't do it. And these are amazing. They're only 12 to 15 minutes a piece. There are three of them. And I want you to subscribe to the series at inspiredgrief.com. All you have to do is put in your first name and your email address, and that will subscribe you to this awesome, and I mean awesome, audio series that will really upend the way our culture has conditioned you to think of death and loss in God's plan. So get the audio series. My book, To Sam With Love, is available at the best pricing at another domain of mine, inspiredgrief.com/book. So yeah, so that's the best pricing available for To Sam With Love. And To Sam With Love really kind of serves as a roadmap to moving forward. It's kind of like an example of how one woman, moi, moved forward into that next chapter of life so brilliantly. And it will give you lots of ideas for how you might also do the same after losing the love of your life.
Right. Thank you so very much for being so strong and for taking on this journey of sharing your story to inspire other women who have gone through, who will go through, or who are currently going through that level of grief. Because again, this is very particular with the love of their lives, like their partners. Like it's mm-hmm. a different type of one, you know, when the person is no longer there. You can't walk together anymore. You can't eat together anymore, you know, and just sharing your story to help people navigate that, I think it's a very, very beautiful thing. And also allowing yourself to live again. It's just such a beautiful journey you're on. And I hope that you keep impacting lives positively with the rest of your time here as well, until you get to join Sam again.
Thank you, EJ, for having me. It's really my pleasure. And I just want to say, I am pretty sure that I'm just the messenger. This is all coming from God, and he's chosen me to be the messenger. And so here I am.
Absolutely. Delivering the message, and you've done your part. Those who have ears, let them hear. Thank you so very much. All right, guys, this is where the draw the curtain today on Stretch Street Podcast. This is the energetic EJ. Till I come your way again next week with another episode on the show, reminding you that challenges are not, you know, exclusive to you. You see, Vicky here has gone through grief as well. So you're not alone on that journey of grief, and it can be better. You don't have to stay in there for so long. The length of your grieving in the weighty way does not increase the level or decrease the level of love that you have for the person who has passed. And to be honest, the person who has passed would truly want you to be happy. They would want you to move on. They would want you to live a better life. And so the story here today is just to encourage you that there are ways to grieve in a way that would not weigh you down, but would actually open you up to even better opportunities to live a life that would make your loved one who has passed proud of what you've become. So yeah, until I come here again next week, remain amazing. God bless you. See you next week. Bye-bye.